the Vegan Pod. For those of you that are new to the podcast, don't forget to subscribe. Each month we tackle topical vegan issues and ask questions about vegan living. And we'd love to have you join us on this journey of exploration into everything that it means to be vegan. Today we're turning our sights to the art world, and we're talking to two vegan artists about how their veganism intersects with their artwork, about using art as a form of activism, and how to ensure all of your art materials are animal friendly. I'm really pleased today to be joined by artists Rebecca Lanyon-Wilmot and Philip McCulloch-Downs. Rebecca is an activist, artist, and mother of two young children living in Lancaster. Her art is centered around encouraging connection with nature, peace, justice, and sustainability. And she does this both through her art practice as well as her creative community workshops using vegan art materials. Rebecca's art encourages conversation about awareness of how art can be a tool for radical change that everybody can access. Philip became vegetarian in 1989, and then in 2005, he became a vegan after starting work at an animal rights charity. He then became a committed animal rights artist in 2014 after his first painting of photographer Joanne MacArthur went viral on social media. He was one of the first members of the worldwide collective, The Art of Compassion Project. And if you've been to any of the UK Veg Fest, you will have seen those guys. They are typically present and showcasing a selection of amazing vegan art. Really appreciate you both taking the time to join us today. Typically, we begin by asking you guys about your vegan journey. I think this is really important to kind of understand that people come to veganism from like a range of different angles, different ages, different life stages. So yeah, I really love hearing about everyone's different stories. So Rebecca, if you're happy to begin, could you tell us a little bit about how you came to be vegan?
Yeah, of course. So I was brought up from a young age as on a pescatarian diet in the 90s. So I had that sort of awareness of not eating meat apart from the fish. We were different to other families. It just vegetarian was seen as a very strange thing in the early 90s. There wasn't really any education on veganism or vegetarianism. And yeah, I had the luck of having a young woman visited our primary school who was vegan and talked about her journey, and she like talked about what she ate, and that was kind of really eye-opening and kind of planted that seed of like, oh, that veganism isn't such a strange thing. So yeah, but it wasn't until I actually went to university that I stopped eating fish and kind of taken control of what I was eating and what I was wearing. And that's when I kind of transitioned to veganism from, you know, having some vegan friends at university, and I had a breakup of a relationship. So it kind of shifted things in my life, and I lost a bit of weight. Veganism kind of gave me the tool to a step to having a bit more structure to my diet. And I started cooking more and experimenting with different foods like I never really cooked before. So in my early 20s, it was like, wow, this is an amazing thing. There's so many different foods I can try. And yeah, it was really, really such a beneficial step for me to go vegan. And it just opened up so many pathways. You know, I hadn't considered that the dairy industry was just so horrific to animals and the environment. And it was just such an eye-opener for me. And it's been just like one of the best decisions of my life to become a vegan.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing for a lot of people, isn't it? It's certainly not obvious kind of how bad the dairy and egg industry are, because of course, you know that your meat comes from a dead animal. So people are a bit more aware of that. But in terms of the dairy and egg industry, it's certainly a lot more hidden, and people kind of don't really realize the animal cruelty that is present in those industries. It is interesting that you say about uni, because that was similar to me. Like I ended up going vegan at university as well. And I think that can be the case for a lot of people, because I suppose it's the first kind of time, if you've been living with your parents prior to that and kind of, you know, part of the family meal cycle, it's kind of the first time that you're really in charge of what you're eating completely, your food shops and everything. So you get a bit more of a say over your meals, I suppose. It's certainly a pivotal time, I think, in a lot of people's lives. What about you, Philip? Was your journey kind of similar, or did you have a different experience?
I think it was very similar over a long frame. I do remember when I was a child, I loved greenery, greens, veg, because my dad had an allotment. So basically, it's his fault, much to his annoyance, it's his fault that I'm a vegan, because I was aware of where all the vegetables coming from. I helped grow them, and I knew they were healthy. So I had a really good food upbringing. But every Sunday, probably just on a Sunday, we would have meat. And I always hated it, just innately hated it. I didn't know why. I'm not saying that was a moral decision. I just hated the taste of it. And I used to chew it up and spit it onto my brother's plate when no one was looking. It was disgusting. Or put it in the cat bowl when I went to get a glass of water. There was a lot of subterfuge. And my mum was so relieved when soya chunks came out for the first time in a can in about 1978. She was just so relieved. So I just started eating that. But I didn't really give it much thought until I was 19. And then my girlfriend at the time, we were driving in a car, and a sheep transporter drew up next to us. So eye to eye with the sheep looking straight at me. And she said, because she'd gone vegetarian, she said, how can you justify eating meat when you see that? And I had literally no answer. And with the bravado of being 19, I was just like, OK, I'll change everything. So parents were upset. What are you going to eat? And all of that. It's a familiar pattern. And then off to Polytechnic, where everyone was vegetarian. It's not, you know, it was just a badge of honour. You just did. Very, very popular in the early 90s. And then, yeah, it was a big, long gap before I joined a rights charity. And I was volunteering. And I lasted about a year and a half or something. I was eating cheese, I think, in my sandwiches, smuggling them in. And I thought, this is ridiculous. This is just between me and my own conscience. This is stupid. So I just thought, they're all healthy. These people are really lovely. This is a good new group to be in. I then actually got a permanent job there. And I just thought, everything changes. And it was so easy. It mystifies me when people say it's difficult. It was the easiest thing. And it's become easier and easier and easier with all the products available now. So mine was just, it was an internal choice. It was the easiest thing. And like I say, it does mystify me when people say, How can you do this? You know, I'm quite naive. I'm quite shocked that more people aren't, really. And I'm, you know, maybe I just think my journey was so obvious that I can't imagine why more people haven't done this, because I'm extremely healthy.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you go vegan and you do realise, much like you were saying, Rebecca, it really opens you up to, oh, all these meals I can make, all this cooking I can do. You think veganism is going to be restrictive. And then when you actually start doing it and kind of dig into it, you're like, oh, actually, it's a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And I can try all these foods that maybe I hadn't even thought about before. And you can make those swaps. And as you've said, Philip, it's got so much easier over the years. I mean, I like to say now, you know, it really is absolutely no more complicated than eating, you know, a diet that includes meat and dairy, because you go to the same supermarkets, you just have to look at like a different shelf, but you can get virtually every product that you can get in, you know, a non-vegan version, you can now get a vegan version. And it really is so straightforward. I think it's quite interesting that you had that moment of connection, I suppose, where you saw the, you know, the lorry with animals in, when you were in that car, because I think those moments are really impactful of kind of, you often have like an abstract view that your food comes from somewhere, that the meat comes from somewhere, but until you're actually kind of face to face with it, you don't necessarily make that connection. I did actually notice when I was doing a bit of research for this episode that you refer to your journey to becoming an artist generally as a calling rather than a choice. And I just wondered if you could expand a little bit more on that and tell us sort of why you felt so drawn to art, and then how that came to like intersect with your veganism down the line.
It's a very pertinent time to ask me, because I feel like I'm beginning a new chapter of my life because of certain family events and so on recently. I really do feel that this is a time to have a look back and see what the story is, I think, in terms of stories. And I see mine as a child's story, really, because when you're a child, you're very naive, and as long as you've got a stable upbringing, and mine was very stable and very pleasant, and I was very well aware, living in Malvern on the Malvern Hills where I did, that nature was all around me. My dad was growing food on the allotment, and I just felt immediately connected with the say the plant life there. But then whenever I saw cows or sheep, there was something that was a really wrong feeling. My dad told me as an infant I was often really upset by this, so I knew, like, in my heart that something was wrong with that, and nothing I wanted any part of. So it's just a battle, right, as you grew up to get through to having your own say in it. So I was very happy to become a vegetarian. It felt like a weight was lifted. Now, all the time I've been an artist, so as a separate journey, I was through A-levels and Polytechnic, and then a graphic design studio, and then I volunteered at the charity. But at home, I was doing my own artwork all the time. So that was bubbling along all the time. And I think the two intersected, really, when I'd been doing a lot of writing. I've been writing for about a decade, and I realized all the themes of my books were vegan. It was just a natural thing. They're mostly fantasy, magical realism. But veganism was always in them. Still, the penny didn't drop. It took such a long time. I was painting portraits and illustrating the books and working a lot at home for myself. And then I read We Animals by Joanne MacArthur, the animal rights photographer. And I was so moved by it, this was 2014, that I contacted her, I emailed her, and she replied. I couldn't believe she bothered to reply, but she's the most lovely person in the world. She replied and encouraged me to keep going with, it was just a friendly reply. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to paint a portrait of her. So that's what happened. And as you said in your introduction, it went all over the place, mad on the internet. I could not believe the effect that it had had. And it was almost like the penny dropped. The penny was always going to drop, but it just took ages to combine, like my job, the information I could get through my job with their resources, their photography, their investigation photographs, and, you know, my morals, I suppose. Everything came together with the one picture. And it was just, right, I'm going to do this. It felt like finally my calling was obvious, because it just simply seemed the right thing to do. And that was the beginning of the whole chapter that I've now sort of ended. And now I'm talking to you about it. It feels very satisfying to sum it up in this way.
It's really amazing when you kind of have those moments where lots of different areas of your life come together. So that's fantastic. What about you, Rebecca? Did you have sort of like a similar experience getting into kind of art and combining that with your passion for activism and veganism? Or was it a little bit of a different route for you?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think I started off like when you're at school and you're just experimenting with whatever the teachers give you, like wax crayons and poster paints. And you just, you know, as a child, you're not thinking about where those materials are coming from, and you're just having fun making art. But it's always felt like art has been a part of me. Like Philip says, it's just something that you know, it is like a calling. You just do it, and it's just so integral to who I am. I think when I was on my art foundation course, I was doing a lot of color graphs, like really big prints of my partner, prints of my sister, doing kind of quite domestic things like sewing or just cooking. And yeah, I think I really like that sort of just the focus on doing natural things that just, but kind of highlighting them through art and through quite bold prints. And yeah, at the time I wasn't probably considering as much about, or probably just didn't come to mind that whether the ink was vegan. But when I went to I did an MA at Edinburgh Uni in illustration, and that's when, like, I've always been passionate about the environment and using sustainably sourced materials in my work. But it was really then that I was looking even more into my materials, like even like the paper, making sure that it, you know, it was just like mind blowing to like pick up a paper pad and see that it was gelatin coated. And I was just thinking, that's not something I want to do. I want my artwork to reflect my ethics and my ethics about being vegan and caring about the environment. Yeah. So yeah, it just gradually grew and grew about being like reflecting my ethics in my artwork. And that drew me to creating my own paints, like buying like natural pigments and like making my own paints at home for my illustration work. So yeah, it was really going to kind of the basics of art and making your own materials as well. I was finding that was part of the process. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to go and buy some paint and then just not think about where it's come from. So that was a big part of my journey as a vegan artist. It's just always been so important that my art reflects my ethics and my activism. And when I left university, I did some illustrations for the Peace and Justice Society in Edinburgh, and like really bold lino cuts for their publication. And that just makes you feel good when you know that something you've made reflects a part of you.
You did touch on there some sort of examples of things that might not be vegan, or how you can kind of ensure things are vegan. I'm just really interested to hear a little bit more about that, I suppose, because as someone who, I'm definitely an artist myself, but, you know, I do dabble in crafty things now and again, painting, pottery sessions, things like that. And I really don't think that I've ever kind of considered that certain things in art materials might not be vegan, or what to even kind of look for. So what sort of things should we be looking out for? And are there products that contain animal derived ingredients that we wouldn't expect? I mean, I think that one that you've just mentioned, Rebecca, the pad that was kind of coated in gelatin, I mean, that's really interesting. I'm just wondering if you have any other sort of examples of things that people should look out for when they're creating.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, there's a lot of art materials that contain animal derived ingredients. So a few years ago, I wrote an article for the Vegan Society on this topic of vegan art materials. And there is a lot of detective work you have to do. There's the beeswax, which is in a lot of crayons, and it coats a lot of, like, I teach bookbinding, and it, for the thread that I use, it's quite often that when you see online, it's coated traditionally in beeswax. So I just buy either the linen thread on its own, or there are some people like on Etsy who make a vegan version with like cornstarch. Yeah, there's lots of things like crayons. It has a stearic acid in, which is a saturated fatty acid from animal. It sometimes is vegetable fat, thing that spurred me on to kind of, you know, do a lot of investigation into vegan art materials. There's things like glue can often be animal based. So yeah, something called secatine, which is fish based, is often in glue. Yeah, there's also the colors in, like, watercolors and paints can be contain insects. Like, look out for shellac, and sometimes like the color black can be from bone char. Charred bone, which isn't very nice. Also, brushes is one that comes to mind, can be hog-based. Hog hair or horse hair. Tempera in paint, yeah, that's egg-based. Yeah, an awful lot.
Yeah, lots of things, and lots of quite, yeah, unusual things, I suppose, that you just wouldn't consider unless you had, you know, like yourself, clearly given it a lot of thought. So, no, that's really interesting. Philip, what about you? Did you kind of... You know, obviously you've said that your kind of art came before your veganism and has always been kind of part of your life. Did you kind of have a little bit of a transition period where you maybe discovered that certain things weren't vegan in your art materials and you had to kind of swap those over?
Yes, when I joined the charity I started volunteering in 2003 and then was employed there, I started looking at everything, because reading the information from, you know, being surrounded by leaflets and information was a real eye opener to look. It was everywhere. Animal products are absolutely everywhere. And I really didn't, you know, I admit that until that point, I did start thinking about it. Luckily, using acrylic paints, I'm quite traditional artist, I'm set in my ways. I had a palette of acrylic paints that I still use now. There is ivory black and there's Payne's grey that I don't use, because they are, as Rebecca just said, with charred bones are used in the ivory black anyway. And it's just very easy to find a different black instead of that, like processed black. And I never use any brushes that are sable or hog's hair. I mean, the clue is obviously in the name, from the word go. Never would have bought those in the first place anyway. And then there's canvases. I used to use paper, very standard cartridge paper. But then when I started buying canvases, I realized that glue, as you say, as Rebecca said, glue, you know, but then I think we've got here Winsor & Newton do those as well, which are vegan. So essentially it's quite a clean medium to use is acrylic paint. Is oil paints, I haven't started. I am going to try, but I will need to look into that, because I do obviously want my art to reflect exactly my ethics, especially because the imagery on this animal rights art, of course, is expressing a bold opinion. And it's very hypocritical if you've used animal products to paint factory farmed animals on the actual canvas itself. So, I'm very satisfied that I'm clean, as it were, in that respect.
Yeah, as I've said, it's one of those things where you just have to kind of research and figure out which products are appropriate and learn as you go, I suppose. I think when you go into veganism, it's very food-based at the forefront. You know that you need to kind of swap out those animal products in your diet. These slightly less obvious things, like, you know, products in art materials and stationery and things like that, lots of people don't really think about it. So it's really interesting to consider. In terms of art as activism, we know that art can be an incredibly powerful and moving tool, and often reflects, you know, your experiences, your life experiences as artists, or kind of wider social issues. And so, yeah, it would just be great to hear a little bit more about how you utilize your artwork to spark conversations around veganism, around animal rights, and what type of art you maybe feel is most effective in doing that.
Yes, well, when I was at Polytechnic, I remember my tutor in the first days of being there showed me the work of Sue Coe, which I was absolutely naive, never even heard of her before. And it absolutely blew me away. But because it was so horrible, so horrendous to look at, that I remember truly thinking that I will never be an artist like this. I will never have a social effect like this. I just thought, that's not for me. And then I carried on my merry way for some decades. And then it is a really nice story to say that when I did the ghost camera, it got all the attention. I thought, that's because it's got a heart to it. There's an individual at the center of this portrait, Joanne MacArthur, and actual real individual animals around her that she has met. Some she saved, some she didn't. I thought the heart of the artwork is that it's true and sincere. So I thought, well, I will take up the mantle of this. I will paint only what is absolutely real and realistic. So I used the worst photographs of factory farming and investigation footage I could find. My sort of badge of honor is I won't change anything at all on these, so they have to be absolutely real. And that was my approach. And I realize now, telling you this, of course, that was what Sue Coe did to me all those years ago, showed me the blistering truth. Mm-hmm. And I could take it, but I could also never forget it. So I must have, you know, buried that deep down, and then realized, well, this is sort of, it is attention grabbing, but not in a way that I would sign my name on the pictures, which I would not, because it's all about the image. The image comes first. You may or may not think about the artist later, and probably very last of all, you'll think about how is that painted. First things first is the image goes in, because it's so striking. And that's what Sue Coe's artwork did to me. So I emulated that at least for the first, like a third of my artwork, at least of these factory farming images for quite a few years, like 3-4 years. And they're absolutely dreadful. If I look through a load of photos, mm-hmm. I could go through hundreds from the charity investigation undercover stuff. And any photo that I couldn't bear to look at would be the one that I would consider painting. Yeah. And it was awful, like psychologically, but it's had its effect. So now I have a library of work that does to other people what Sue Coe's work did to me all those years ago. And just as a to that story is that when I first put my very first paintings up as canvas prints in an exhibition in London in a restaurant, they were I discovered that my painting, a particularly galling one of a pig near a farrowing crate, it was really awful to look at, was wedged between a Joanne MacArthur photograph and a Sue Coe print. And I thought, well, there couldn't be better symbolism than, yeah, like, yeah, I think I've stepped up into a world that I want to be in. But nobody really, a member of the public, wouldn't look at those three pictures and go, oh, that's a Sue Coe, that's a Joanne MacArthur, that's a Philip Clowns. They'd look at them and be blown away by the horrendous moving nature of the pictures. So that's what I mean by having stepped up, not into a world of art and artists, but into a world of activism that is unflinching, basically, in its effect.
I think there is something to be said for the artwork that, you know, really reflects those kind of moments in factory farming, etc., because, you know, we're not necessarily going to see certainly those photographs or that film footage unless you're kind of already in that, you know, animal rights area. But it's an art piece that you obviously might initially look at and think, I'm looking at a piece of art. Yeah. And then you kind of, you know, have those moments of reflection, as you had with Sue Coe's, where it kind of lingers with you. I think art has, yes, a really, really lasting impact.
Yes, definitely.
Rebecca, what about you? I know you, obviously, you've said that you like to kind of incorporate lots of nature and things into the art that you do, and you do have the community workshops. Are they quite effective as a tool to kind of start conversations with people, or how does your kind of activism combine with your art?
Yeah, so I regularly run workshops with community groups, with families and children, and also run like workshops with adults. Yeah, I've done a lot over the years of different groups, like people with Alzheimer's, people at festivals and at theatres. And unlike Philip, my work isn't, I wouldn't say the content of what I'm printing is particularly like vegan. like the message there. But when I run workshops, I always ensure the materials are vegan. And I always say at the start of the workshop that the materials here are all vegan, especially in the bookbinding workshops, as traditionally bookbinding is quite animal heavy in its materials, with the leather for the cover of the book and the beeswax thread to stitch the book together, bone folder, which, well, the majority now are plastic. I use plastic folders. But yeah, that kind of sparks that conversation about, oh, why are you using vegan materials? I wouldn't have considered that. And people often ask me where, and they want to either for me to send them an email list of where the materials are that have been used in the workshop so that they can use, you know, practice at home, continue the artwork. So yeah, it's definitely through the materials, mainly through my artwork and working with community groups. And I think that is a really effective way of starting up a conversation about using vegan art materials in your work and, you know, decreasing the exploitation of animals as an artist.
Yeah, definitely. Because obviously you'll have, yeah, lots of different people from, you know, different areas and different walks of life coming to those workshops who may not have ever thought about veganism. And yeah, just by you obviously explaining, you know, that the materials are vegan, that's going to plant a seed and spark a conversation, like you say, over, well, why is it important that Rebecca's provided these vegan materials? What about art materials aren't normally vegan? And I think planting those seeds can often be really effective, just like a little thought in someone's mind that can then develop into something bigger later down the line. Philip, I know you are part of the Art of Compassion Collective. I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about that. I have seen the Art of Compassion Collective at VegFest that I've been to, and I think it's really impactful to obviously have all that kind of vegan art in one place.
Yes.
So yeah, if you could just tell us a little bit more about kind of how that came to, you know, be a thing, and like what it is for the listeners that don't know.
Well, it is a really lovely story as far as I'm concerned, because while I was at the charity working away and just starting with these animal rights paintings that I'd sort of created a niche at work for doing this, and they were being successfully used on in campaigns at the charity, I also was contacted by Lee Sanders, who is a lady who lives in northern Spain. And she started this Art of Compassion because around about 2015, she had done the Veganuary, you know, course project. She had gone through Veganuary and it did her health so much good. She's not, wasn't very well at all. But after this, going through Veganuary, she felt so much better. She wanted to give something back. So she contacted, I do not know how many, but it was like a handful, one of which was me, because she'd seen the ghost camera picture of Joanne MacArthur. And fledgling organization was formed. And this was in mind to publish a book of an eclectic book of a variety of vegan artists, which I don't think at that point had ever been done. I really don't think so. And what happened was, is that more and more people joined. Like, you know, it's maybe a rising movement along with the rising vegan movement of the time of the sort of 2015 era. And then she sort of got sidetracked away from doing the book into, well, we've got so much artwork and so many artists willing to give permission to print up and pay for, like the artists actually pay for their own work to be printed up and then sold at events, which is so unbusinesslike. It's a real collective, very old fashioned. It's all given away. And then the money we made was always given to animal sanctuaries or charities that we really trusted. I'm saying we because I've been part of it for such a long time. I definitely am. I'm allowed to say that now. I've been in it since then. So it's not big headed. But there's got to be about 100 artists in it by now. But anyway, Lee got sidetracked into doing all these shows, and they were abroad at first. They were in France mostly. And then suddenly VegFest said, oh, we'll give it a go in 2017. And coincidentally, I had just left the charity I was with because I felt my artwork wasn't going anywhere. And I didn't like having a boss. And I wanted to give it a go as an independent artist, which is terrifying. It's a niche being a vegan artist, let alone an animal rights vegan artist. But anyway, so I left. And lo and behold, at that exact time, the Art of Compassion and VegFest bonded together. And I found myself merely a couple of months later after leaving in London at the London VegFest. And initially, people there were wondering, what on earth, why would you have art at a VegFest? It's about the food and the lectures, maybe in the clothing and the charities. But we have now become a mainstay, and I have heard people like I just finished Fest Bristol Saturday, just gone. And you do have people come around, say hello again. We always come for your artwork. We always come to see what you're doing. So we've become a real, thanks to VegFest and thanks to Lee Sanders, this has given me one of the greatest platforms of my life personally, as well as bonding with these 100 or so artists all over the world. It's been absolutely amazing. I have not felt isolated because of that. So many good things have come from this, quite apart from the artwork expressing, well, if there's 100 artists, there's 100 different ways of expressing your support for animal rights. So it's been brilliant. And I must say that finally, Lee Sanders pulled her act together and got round and published the book at last. So that was published. The Art of Compassion book is still available. It's a print on demand. And it is a remarkable, what an end to that project. But of course, the great side effect is all the VegFest stuff. And I've been to VegFest. I've now gone to with the Art of Compassion posters, I've gone to the International Animal Rights Conference in Luxembourg twice. There's been a couple of shows at animal sanctuaries. It's a force of nature. We will go where we're invited, basically. And I don't think there's anything else like it, because when you explain to them, when they say, well, what are you exactly? And it just sounds so desperately old fashioned and almost impossible. It's like we give it all away, and any money we make goes half to supporting us. So for train journeys and coach trips and all of that, printing posters, and the other will go to animal sanctuaries. So I'm very proud. And of course, Lee Sanders, she is the one to be thanked for all of this. It's been, well, thank God for her, really, because I don't know what I would have done. I don't know. I wouldn't be talking to you now. I don't know where I would have to get a proper job, basically.
A proper job. No, yeah. that's absolutely amazing. You absolutely should be really proud of that. It sounds like a fantastic community for you and the other artists that are a part of it to really connect with each other and, you know, network and communicate about, yeah, different opportunities in your work and how you can use your work to obviously spread the vegan animal rights message. I mean, I find it so interesting. Obviously, the very nature of art is that everyone, you know, will have slightly different styles and they'll be communicating different things, and I think it's really impactful to kind of see that all in one place and see how different people are sharing that message in that artwork. Yeah, well done to you and all the other artists really for being part of that.
Thank you.
I would love to know if you've had a memory or an example of a time where your artwork has sparked a conversation or ignited a discussion around kind of animal rights or veganism.
I've offended people online a lot. I know that with my anti-dairy and big anti-pig farming and all of that, because they are truly horrendous images. But in terms of knowing that I've offended people, or at least started their minds working or shocked them, which is what I felt that way myself. So I want to make other people feel that way. But I'm hugely sympathetic to people who are upset by it, because I remember made an old lady cry quite badly when she saw that very first picture, the one between Suko and Joe's picture, and she was absolutely in tears. And I was saying, I know this is the correct way to feel. I'm really sorry, but this proves you're human. You have a conscience and you care. And I said, I can't look at this picture either, which I absolutely mean. When I go back through my catalogue of these early works anyway, not the celebratory works I did later, but these first ones, I feel absolutely dreadful, which is, again, absolutely correct. But so anyway, in terms of actually affecting people, it would have to be at the VegFest, which is the only place really that they are on display, and people do bring along vegetarians, say, and meat eaters as well. So there's a great crowd of people who see the stuff. And whenever anything involving the babies, which I seem to specialise in being really nasty about babies, using them as an allegorical sort of tool, when the young babies with the Holstein skin instead of calves, obviously. And I also did, what have I done? A weanling ring in the nose for that calves have put in so they can't feed, take milk from their mothers. I was so shocked when I painted, I had no idea about weanling rings until quite recent years. So I thought, well, the obvious thing to do is to put it in the nose of a baby, a human baby, and crying. It looks awful, awful images. And that upsets people a lot. I hear people stopping and talking about it. And that happened again, just at this VegFest again, just on Saturday. So I didn't know that about it. And I said, well, it isn't my intention to offend as much as to inform, really. You should be offended. That is absolutely correct. But the worst thing, I think, the thing that I've caused most upset with, and I have heard this a lot, is the baby's picture in the freezer, meat, which I went down to my local Tesco's and photographed lots and lots of meat products. And I got stopped three times while I was doing it because they didn't know what I was doing. And I was I felt very offended, but I just sort of laughed it off a bit because they thought I was very odd for photographing meat. And I thought, don't you think it's really odd that I'm standing in a whole aisle of chopped up animals that you're actually going to eat? I wouldn't go near them. Anyway, I did the painting of the meat in the freezer and then the dead babies, human babies within that. That has caused a lot of offence. And somebody said to me recently, when I saw that, I thought you'd gone over the line. And then I thought about it and I realised, you're just stating a fact that it is all meat. I didn't want to push the message any further than that. There's no cruelty in the picture. It's just, yeah, it's a statement of fact. Now, that stops people in their tracks. It sells well to younger students that they want to use it as to sort of upset their parents, that sort of thing, take on placards. But no one else will buy that picture. But they will stop and think about it, even if they don't want to, because it is an eye catcher. And like I say, I always draw back from too much information. I just want to be very stoic about it. I'm just stating a fact. What you do with that fact is up to you. But to be honest, no one can look at two dead babies in a freezer and think that this is anything like comfortable or correct. So that is my number one most offensive picture. I have done a lot of nice stuff as well, but that is the worst.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And I think it's very relevant to a lot of information that we share as part of the vegan community, because people do become quite, you know, upset or offended at certain information. And it's always interesting to reflect that actually it is just a fact. Like it's not, you know, when we explain what's going on in the meat and dairy industry, or like you have done, you know, created a visual representation of that that gets people to think, we're not like making stuff up to like upset people and offend people. Like it is just factual information, and then their reaction is an indication of, well, maybe it's not normal that this is happening, because why would we be so upset and so offended at something that is supposed to be, you know, fine and just a part of everyday society. No, really interesting. Thank you for that. And yeah, just to finish off, I'd love to know, I know you have touched on a couple of people here in the conversation already, Philip. I'd love to know just from each of you about an artist or two that inspires you and why you feel that their work is impactful. Rebecca, if you want to share.
I've always really liked the artist and illustrator. She makes picture books called Ruby Roth. She's American based and she makes vegan picture books, and they're really beautifully illustrated. I like to think that I would have gone vegan earlier if I'd had that information as a child growing up in the 90s. But yeah, now there's so many more picture books. But yeah, hers I find particularly beautiful. She has a lovely book called V is for Vegan. So it's an alphabet book that goes through like different vegan topics. It's like T is for tofu, and yeah, C is for chicken, and I wouldn't eat their egg. So yeah, I love reading that with my daughter, and it really helps her because she doesn't really have many vegan friends, and she's the only vegan in her year at school. So it's a way for her to identify as a vegan, identify with the character in the book. But yeah, similarly, the Vivi the Super Vegan by Tina Newman, that's an amazing book, and my daughter really identifies with the character in that, and beautiful colourful illustrations, and just helps children identify with being vegan and seeing it as, you know, it's a fun thing to do, it's compassionate to be vegan, and I think it's so important to start that conversation from an early age for children.
Absolutely. No, I think books like that, children's books like that have such an impact, like you say, on making children who are already vegan obviously feel a lot more just kind of included, I suppose, you know, that they know that they're part of a community of, you know, other vegan children. And yeah, it's really nice to have those tools to kind of explain in an age appropriate way what it means to be vegan and why we might choose veganism. And I think obviously that's a fabulous thing about using art as a tool for education and activism, is that you can do it in so many different ways and use so many different styles, that there really is something that's kind of appropriate for everyone, something that will, you know, appeal to all kinds of different people. So no, I really love those examples. Thank you for sharing. What about you, Philip?
Well, if I could just plug the Art of Compassion
of course.
Book, because of course that is 100 or more artists and all their different opinions, and quite a lot of their short essays as well by them, which is it is a smorgasbord of delightful and strange and magical and awful approaches to animal rights activism. So that's the Art of Compassion. But also, just a few years ago, there was a book published, a hardback book called Vegan Art by Tommy Kane. The title is A Book of Visual Protest. Now, that was because the artist Tommy Kane, American man, he has been around since making videos in the 80s for really big groups. So he has really, really earned his stripes in terms of being a graphic designer and video maker. He's only recently become vegan. He contacted me to say, I really want to do something about this. And he's got the connections because of working in sort of basically Hollywood. And he got this book published. Even though COVID stopped it for about 2 years, he got this hardback book published. Now, that is a little bit like the Art of Compassion book, but he handpicked about 30 or so artists. Now, in that book, a slightly different approach because it's a little bit more graphic, and it's his opinion on who he wanted to put in there. But I'm very proud to be in there, and I would just like to reference that this is now available in bookshops. You know, this has sort of crossed the divide. It's not a print on demand. It's crossed the divide and is in bookshops with the art books, which is quite a major thing that happened. Yes, I really do. I think that's impressive. And within that, I just have a few personal friends that I've made since I left my job and started as an independent artist. One of them is Twyla Francois, who's a Canadian lady. She was an investigator in many different animal organisations. Her art is so gentle. It's like a mirror of mine in that it's gentle and affecting and done so powerful messages, but done so gently that I wish I could do that, but I can't. And, you know, as I say, it takes all different types of facets of approaches. My friend Helen Barker, who is the lady that we do the Veg Fest together, she's a member of the Art and Compassion. Her work is so intense and so full of information that, just like Rebecca said, I think if I'd seen that as a child, I would have understood it so completely that I would have become vegan a lot earlier. But she has done some amazing and unique stuff that I don't think anyone else has done. So you have to check out Helen Barker art. And I mean, I've got a massive long list, so I'm just going to keep it right down to one more. Kate Louise Powell is also a very good younger artist who her work is quite a lot of, it's all over the place. She's been doing it for many years. She puts me to shame, really, you know, because I only started 10 years ago. But the reason I mention her is because her early graphics work with the slogans, with the information on them as part of the image, combines brilliantly, and they're very good for impactful, like stickers, posters. So that's another very graphic, as in not graphic horrible, but graphic design, very impactful, and information comes with those images, and it's just beautifully done. There are loads of others, and I just think what I love being in this group, including with Rebecca, how many different ways we can approach activism. And you know that if you met all of the activists together, all of these activist artists, you probably get on with all of them in some way. And I love that, because it is a sort of invisible collective who have a good heart, and they've chosen to devote their lives to expressing this in whatever way they can. I love that. It's a big subject, and I'm glad to have found a niche within it. Take my place.
So powerful, like you say, to have that community where you're all kind of linked by a common thread of your, you know, passion for animal rights and for expressing that in your art. So that's absolutely amazing. I've seen quite a bit of Kate's art over the years, and I think it is, I agree with you, like it's very impactful. She's an amazing artist. The one that sticks out to me is, I know she did a drawing, I think it was, of, I forget how many it was, but it was lots of different eyes.
Oh, 250 eyes. Yes, that's in Tommy Kane's book. He chose that one for the ending of his book. So, yeah 250 eyes for 250 animals killed in the UK per second, I think, yes. In factory farms.
Hugely impactful, I think. And that's really stuck with me since I first saw it, because it really does just illustrate, obviously, the kind of fear in all these animals' eyes, and you really get a sense of the kind of like enormity of what's happening, and just the sheer number of animals that are being killed. So Yeah, no, some really great mentions there. So thank you so much for sharing that. It's been really, really fantastic to chat with you both today and just get some insight into the world of art and how that can intersect with veganism. And as we've said, you know, quite extensively throughout this conversation, I think it is so important for us within the vegan community to have such a range of different approaches to activism. And obviously we have that in, you know, different facets of activism itself, whether that's kind of like educational, you know, street activism, etc. And then we can see through this conversation how within the art world itself, there are so many different approaches according to people's different styles and the message that they're putting out in their art. Like you've said, like some people, you know, may approach that from a more kind of gentle angle. For some people, it may be a bit more graphic. It may be, you know, a real conversation, as we've said with Rebecca, around, you know, the art materials that we're using, and that can plant seeds itself. So yeah, just really, really interesting to see how art itself can be a method for opening people's minds, sparking conversations. And there's so many different people within that all contributing to the vegan movement. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. I've really loved this conversation that we've had today. So thank you both so much for taking the time to join us. For listeners who do want to find a bit more about vegan art materials and alternatives, as Rebecca said earlier on in the episode, she did write a fantastic article for us, which you can read at vegansociety.com, and that's just called Vegan Art Supplies. So if you do want to find out a bit more about that, yeah, head over to our website. And yeah, there's some really, really great resources that Rebecca's shared there. If our audience do want to find out more about your work, Philip and Rebecca, where is the best place for them to go to kind of find out a bit more about you and what you do?
Well, I have a very long name, Philip McCulloch Downs. If you put that into the internet, I think you'll find your way to my website and Facebook page. And I'm on Instagram under Vegan Artivist, vegan_artivist. And I think the final one, YouTube. I have a YouTube channel, but again, YouTube in my name. If there's somebody else with my name, I'll be truly affronted. So I don't think there is. So yeah, you'll find me quite easily, I think.
Fantastic. Thank you. And what about you, Rebecca? Where can we find out a bit more about you and your art?
Probably Instagram is the best option. I've got a few accounts. I've got my main art account is at Rebecca Lanyon Art. And I've got a vegan family account called Vegan Tots, which has got like lots of information about things to do with children that are vegan friendly, like day trips out that are vegan friendly, like alternatives to farms and zoos and vegan art materials you can use, vegan craft activities. And I've set up an account called Vegan Art Kit. So that's an Instagram account, but it doesn't have a lot on it at the moment. My plan is to kind of promote different vegan art materials on there and yeah, provide resources for artists. So yeah, that's probably the best way. I've also got a Facebook that's Rebecca Lanyon Illustration.
Yeah, really good resource going forward for people who need to find out about their vegan art materials. So yeah, fantastic. Thank you for sharing. For listeners, do let us know your thoughts on this episode. Maybe you're an artist yourself and you've got some advice to share, or you're feeling inspired by this episode and thinking of trying out a creative hobby and using that as a tool for activism. We'd love to hear from you. So follow us on X at Vegan Society, on Instagram at The Original Vegan Society, or on Facebook. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss next month's episode of the Vegan Pod.